Today's program is brought to you by White Oak Pastures, a five-generation Georgia-based beef and poultry farm determined to conduct business in an honorable manner. For more information, visit whiteoakpastures.com.
This is Chef Emily Peterson, host of Sharp and Hot. You're listening to Heritage Radio Network, broadcasting live from Bushwick, Brooklyn. If you like this program, visit heritageradionetwork.org for thousands more.
Hey, America. I'm back. I'm Chad Pagano. I'm a former Army sniper. I'm still a chef instructor at the Institute of Culinary Education. Most importantly, I'm an avid, lifelong hunter, and you're about to experience the wild game domain from the hunt to the hearth, airing live on Heritage Radio Network. And today, we are going to talk about, we're going to shoot for 20. We'll see what happens. I don't know. I'm really bad at this timing show things. I'm really good at fudging it at the end, though, Jack, and kind of ending my show. So let's call this show between 10 and 20 animals you could, probably should eat, but probably won't ever in your lifetime. But you should. And if you're a culinarian, if you're part of the food revolution that's going on in this country, these are foods I think we should embrace. Some of them, you know, we have running around in our backyard. Some of them are a little more exotic. Some of them I've consumed. Some of them I haven't. And we'll go through the list and see what you think. Some of them are, I guess, perceived as, what word do I want to use? Gross, disgusting. Others, and I could definitely speak to the ones I've had, may be perceived that way, but they're actually delicious, and depending on how you prepare them, can be a staple in the American diet. But we're going to start nice and easy, and we're going to start with a wild game animal that I've consumed multiple times and actually have done shows on, and that's a squirrel. I forgot the guy's name, a great guy from down south. He does the squirrel cook-off every year, came on as a guest. And we talked about this delicacy that exists, squirrels. And as you know, they're everywhere. And for that reason alone, they're one of the most hunted animals in the United States, believe it or not. Is it the most exciting hunt on the face of the earth? No, probably not. You know, like I said on the show I did about squirrels, it's a great hunt for getting the kids out there. Learning how to hunt, woodscraft, you know, moving around the woods quietly, spotting animals, and then taking a safe, ethical shot on a smaller animal is a great life lesson for any young hunter. Truth of the matter is you'll probably never eat one, and probably for, I don't know, three reasons. They're not easy to kill, even if you're a hunter. They're so quick, you know, because they're really quick and, they're hard to shoot dead. And that turns a lot of people off and then they're wounded and they're running around. So, you know, and if you're not a hunter, obviously you're not going to be running around the woods with your 17 caliber rifle or 22 caliber rifle, trying to take headshots on squirrels. You know, catching them is even harder. You know, trapping them is very hard. You could ask any exterminator who tries to get squirrels out of the attic. They come back. They're family-orientated animals. They'll return to their home. So they're relatively smart. Another reason, even though they kind of make a lot of noise, they're generally barking a lot. When they're around humans, they could stay silent for hours. Try to hunt them. You never hear them. You know, and most people are not willing to sit on a tree stump for a couple of hours and wait for a squirrel to wander by. Certain parts of the squirrel are not exactly delicious. Another reason. But, you know, go down south in parts of Kentucky and deep fried squirrel brains. That's a delicacy. You know, there's some talk of squirrels carrying diseases. You know, I'm talking about, well, you know, don't go out in your backyard in Bushwick today and try to pick off squirrels and eat them. Those are city squirrels. I'm talking about real squirrels out in the woods, you know. But there have been squirrels with mad cow disease, which might turn you off to eating squirrels. But we have a lot of them in this country. And like I said, they are the number one hunted animal in this country. All right. The next one was a little disturbing for me because, truthfully, I should have known about this, and B, at first I was horrified that we'd be eating these animals. You know, they're the king of the jungle. They're the lion. Another host here at the station, Chef Dave Arnold, has a lot of information out there about this practice of eating the lion, from, you know, the ethics of it down to, you know, preparing it, really, in some ways. And truthfully, you know, you probably won't eat lion. But you should know that it's completely legal. It's legal to kill and eat a lion in the United States. We can hunt them. That's not legal. But they are raised in seclusion on farms, lion farms, who knew? But it makes sense for zoos, for circuses, things of this nature, for breeding, for scientific research. And these poor animals that have lived their life in captivity their whole life end up dying of old age, or an accident happens, or another lion kills them. And this meat is completely edible, completely delicious, and it can be sold to purveyors as long as it's processed in a USDA-approved facility, and then resold to us. The thing is about it, it's really expensive because you got to imagine there's not a lot of lions dying in captivity every day. So if you can get your hands on it, you're going to pay a premium for it. A lot of restaurants won't go near it. It's challenging to cook, you know, like most wild games, but especially a lion, the muscular meat is very dense, very strong, not a lot of fat. It's not that tasty. We're accustomed to, you know, obviously fatty, tender, farm-raised animals. The lion's not going to fall into that subject matter. And doing my research, it was funny because Illinois, as an example, tried to pass a law. I didn't get through all my research, so I don't know if they ever did, but they were trying to ban lion meat sales in their state. And I thought, how hypocritical. You know, there was no law about raising them in a pen, torturing them, teaching them tricks, putting them in a circus, reselling them, breeding them for scientific research. All that's fine. But if they die, now we can't eat them. That's against the law. That makes perfect sense to me. To me, it'd be a sin to throw it out, you know, burn it up, throw it in a hole, whatever they do with these dead animals. To me, if the animal's dead and it's good meat, let's try to do something with it. Let's eat it. But like I said, I don't know if I could bring myself to do it. That's the king of the jungle. All right, as we continue on my list, and this is one I've had. I was deployed for a while during my military service to Central America. I spent time in Panama. Spent a couple of months, 6 months in Honduras, and we figured out real quick how to prepare fried scorpions. They were everywhere. And, you know, one of the guys I was stationed with was from Arizona, and he was talking about eating them. I was actually stung by a scorpion. Funny story, I was in my bunk one day, woke up, time to go to work, went to go put my jungle boots on, and I felt like someone took a sledgehammer and slammed it into the bottom of my foot as I put it down in the boot. As I pulled the boot off and fell to the ground holding my foot, I saw about a 4-inch, 3.5-inch scorpion scamper out of my boot and run into the woodwork in our what we called hooches, these kind of rough buildings we lived in. And it ended up I was fine. The bigger ones controlled their poison. I had flu-like symptoms. But the funny part of the story goes, as I was on sick call for 2 days, I got to lay around and fight the flu-like symptoms. As I returned to my bunk that next day, I made sure I shook out my boots the next morning and went through all that. And a scorpion dropped off of my bug netting over my bed. I don't know. They're just attracted to me for some reason. And basically fell into my lap as I sat there in my underwear and freaked me out. I did the girl scream. I went, ah! And I like brushed it off my leg and started running around. And, you know, when you're hanging out with a bunch of hardcore, you know, infantry men, that behavior doesn't go over too well. But then talking to a guy I was stationed with from Arizona said, yeah, we eat them all the time, man. And they're a delicacy. They're really good. And, you know, we ended up frying them. And they were, I got to tell you, a very unique, crunchy, textured snack. I'm trying to think, you know, as I was biting into it, I don't know if this was more mentally pictured or what I was really getting, but it's kind of like, you know, that greasy popcorn you get at the movie theater when you overdo it with that fake butter stuff. It's kind of like that. They're all over the place. I think when I added up all the scorpions in the world, there's a gazillion of them or something like that. They're found in every major landmass in the world except Antarctica. In some places, they're native to that place. Other places, they've been imported and have proved to be very resilient. You know, they fall into the spider family, so at the end of the day, you're eating, you know, a big, crunchy spider. You see them, you know, in Asian countries. Sometimes, you know, they're sold as a quick snack. They're on skewers, kind of all laid out on the table, and people partake of them as a quick, easy snack. So, you know, that's something you could try and see what you think about that. The next one is another animal I've actually tried. And again, in Central America, what I was there, they had these, we just called them jungle rats. They were rats, big, big jungle rats. And what we figured out when we were on guard duty up in these towers overlooking this, I don't know if I'm allowed to say it. I don't know if I ever got cleared. We were guarding these, but here you go, government, come and get me. I'm going to tell them. We had these CIA secret sites in Honduras, and we were monitoring the Gulf of Fonseca. So the CIA would intercept radio messages between, I guess, Costa Rica and whatever the other bad guys were on the other side of us, and we'd try to figure out what the communists were doing. I didn't figure out. I just sat there and tried to guard the box where all the equipment was. But we had these towers. I don't know. They were 40 feet in the air, and we'd overlook the whole area, our whole perimeter. And these rats, towards dusk, for some reason, would scamper out of the jungle through our wire, the gates, and they would kind of hang out underneath these towers. And I figured out real quick that if we had the towers were all encased in sandbags, if you were pretty good, you could lean over the edge of the tower and drop a sandbag on top of these rats and obviously kill them. And then I had the same mindset back then that I have now. If you kill it, you better eat it. I had a guy from, where was he from? Sergeant V. I forget, some tropical island, and he knew how to prepare it. And we skinned it, we gut it, we skinned it, and we put it on the put it on the open fire, a couple of spices we stole from the mess hall, and it was actually really, really tasty. In certain cultures, you know, obviously not here in the United States, but in a lot of cultures around the world, rats are a protein staple. They have to have them. India is the perfect example. Women are only permitted to eat meat from fish, pork, wild birds, and rats. In other cultures, the Hawaiian, Polynesian cultures, rats are an everyday food. The cane rat, it makes up approximately half of the locally produced meat consumed by people in Hawaii, traditional Polynesians, in Guyana, you know, other countries around, well, half of the meat they eat. And there's many varieties of rat. Obviously, you guys, if you're listening to me in Brooklyn, you know about varieties of rats. There's rats everywhere. One of them, though, swamp rats from down south, they're a big problem. They're hunted openly. A lot of people won't eat them. They let them just go to waste. They're found in the swamps down south, so they let the gators take care of them. But there is a fair contingent of people down south who consume these swamp rats on a regular basis. You know, these larger rodents, the ones I got in Honduras were immense. I mean, think, you know, I don't know, the size of a chicken. So, you know, they had a lot of substantial meat on them. If you just Google rat recipes, I mean, there is an endless variety of recipes. You know, I don't know. We did ours like Cajun spiced, you know, but I mean, you could find any kind of recipe. There was one recipe I found for a rat jambalaya out there on the internet. So, you know, just an option. Try to trap that rat, make a little meal of it. How many animals was that, Jack? I'm through three. Four animals. Okay, so maybe 10. We're closer to 10 here because guess what? We're halfway through the show already. So with that, we're going to take a short break, and you'll be right back with the Wild Game Domain on heritageradionetwork.org. Hey, welcome back. I'm your host, Chad Pagano, and you're listening to the Wild Game Domain, and we are going through a list of abundant but crazy animals that you could possibly eat. The next one, I guess, is a little more mainstream now, and it's kind of gaining traction, or has gained traction. I've seen a lot of articles. A colleague of mine actually wrote a blog on her blog about some interesting things you could do with jellyfish, you know, gelatinous, tentacled, stinging blobs of jelly that just float around in the ocean trying to mess up your beach day as you make it to the beach on the weekend. If you go to the beach, you know, regularly, you've probably been stung by these. You know, my kids are obsessed with them when we go to the beach. You know, they're I don't know, I guess it's August. At some point, they all wash up on the beach we go to out on Long Island. And for whatever reason, and my kids are just obsessed with them, poking them. My one daughter, the humanitarian, the lover of Earth, wants to push them back in the water to try to save them. She can't understand how we could sit there and poke all these beautiful creatures of the earth. But they're being used a lot more often now than you would think. You know, obviously an unlikely ingredient. But I guess because I think they're something like 99% or, you know, somewhere between 95 and 99% water. But they're being used in different dishes, sesame jellyfish, you know, lightly sauteed sesame jellyfish. I've seen jellyfish salads. Sounds delicious, right? How about, a lightly blanched jellyfish on top of your salad? And the funny thing about them is they have a very interesting texture. They kind of crunch on the outside once they're prepared or cooked in some way. And then, you know, obviously very gelatinous on the inside. So, you know, that's something you might want to try. They're abundant and everywhere. The next one on my list I was going to do, but I don't know how shocking it really is. I was going to be funny and say, hey, we're from New York. How about those pigeons that the old lady feeds at the park, right? And that seem to be getting more brazen as I get older. I don't know. They don't even move anymore. The ones in Bushwick have attitude. They just stand there. I'm walking around the pigeons now. They don't kind of scamper out of the way anymore. You know, if you call it squab, it's a little less shocking. You know, if you're in France and you're eating a young pigeon, not uncommon at all. It tastes somewhat, if you've never had it, I guess, It's gamey, you know, so it's kind of got a duck thing going on almost. It's kind of got, if you've ever had duck, you know, it's an ancient delicacy. I mean, it dates back to ancient Egypt. The Romans ate it. Look at any medieval empire and they were, you know, it was the food of kings. Modern preparations are considered a delicacy because, you know, the meat is kind of mild, tender. Some suggest, and I don't get this, that has a fruity flavor to it, the squab, the pigeon itself. But again, another, if you've never tried it, it's something you should experience. And see what you think. You only live once. You got to get out there and try these animals. All right. So this next one I've actually had, and it's funny because it's not really an animal. It's more of a category of animal. And, my wife's going to kill me cause she said, never talk of this, please, on your show or anywhere at any of my wife's a fancy educator. So we go to fancy dinner parties. She's like, when you get into a conversation, don't talk about that. But to me, a conservationist and a hunter, I have in the past consumed roadkill. When I was in the service, I hung out with a bunch of what do we call them up here? Hillbillies or rednecks. And those were my boys, man. They were country folk and I liked hanging out with them. And they started talking about, you know, eating roadkill. And I was like, what? I never do that. How do you know? And they're like, what? I mean, you know, you got to ascertain freshness of the kill, make sure it hasn't been there that long. So what am I talking about? I've had deer that was a roadkill. We were driving one night, we struck a deer. The poor thing had a broken neck, ran out probably like ended up like four or five feet off the road in a gully. And we didn't know what we hit. We were driving along. I wasn't driving. I was actually in the back of the van I was in. And we slammed on the brakes. We were like, oh, man, we killed somebody. And we got out. We were looking around. We saw blood. And on the van itself, walk down a little bit into the gully, and there's this poor deer, doe, dead, fresh kill right there. And we said, oh, what do we do now? Do we got to call the cops? How does this work? So it turns out that if you want to take a deer off the road, you could contact the local state troopers, DEC. There's a procedure for it, but there's nothing illegal about it. And while my friend did that, I gutted it. And we pulled it and put it in the back of the van. And when we got back to the barracks, we hung it and we started skinning it. We had beautiful roadkill deer venison that night. We were grilling up the loins. We froze a lot of the meat and we ate it for a couple of weeks there. But everything, beavers, squirrels, skunk, are consumed all over this country. And it's not only legal, but in a lot of states, it's encouraged. It helps the local wardens, the local, whatever those people are called, the people that work on the highway department. So if you want to eat roadkill, obviously you want something that's recently deceased. Look for blood. That's the thing. Look for the blood. The blood, if it's not congealed, not that oily, you typically have a fresh kill there. It's funny, some of the guys I serve with down south, they called it shopping. They went shopping. They would drive up and down the highways and try to find these road kills. And this is one that you can find on the road, a possum. They tend to become roadkill in certain parts of North America. But in certain countries, the possum population is really out of control. New Zealand is the example. It was introduced to establish a fur trade in New Zealand in like the 1800s. And really in New Zealand, without natural predators, now they have something like 88 million possums in New Zealand, believe it or not. And the New Zealanders, Kiwis, right? They're called, is that offensive? No, they're Kiwis. Oh. I don't want to offend my friends from New Zealand, so we'll just call you New Zealanders. Much respect. They'll eat them. In the American South, again, the South, this stems from poverty, from hard times down south through the history of the United States. There was possum stews, possum gumbo on the dinner menus. It's kind of greasy. It's a very tender animal, a possum. It's a lazy, slow animal, tends to have a decent amount of fat, but that kind of lends to the greasiness of it. I would compare it to maybe a rabbit. If you've had rabbit before, it's kind of in that ballpark, but a little bit greasier at the end of the day. All right, this one's going to offend everyone, so I'm going to enjoy this one. Cats. You could eat cats, household cats, regular cats running around. Cats are everywhere. Just look. You know what, Jack? You could look on YouTube. That proves it. How many stupid cat videos are there? Right? Oh, look at my cat chasing a red dot from a laser. Right? So I know there's a lot of cats out there. They're everywhere. I think we have something, don't quote me, 500 million domestic cats worldwide. And around 30% of U.S. households have at least one cat. For me, forget the cat person versus the dog person debate. I won't get into that. Plenty of pet people love their cats. I get it. But in certain parts of the world, guess what? In certain provinces of China, Peru, a few towns in Peru, even in rural areas of Switzerland, cats are considered a delicacy. But with so many cultures going, all the way back to ancient Egypt, we have a soft spot for these felines. The practice hasn't really caught on, but listen, desperate times could call for desperate measures. You could eat Fluffy the cat. We used to have a cat called Sunday because it looked like an ice cream sundae to my daughter. Truthfully, never really thought of eating that cat, but could have if we had to. Doves were on my list, but I'm going to start getting a little more controversial here. And one of them is sharks. you know, obviously the big news about how many sharks there are, how few sharks there are left in the world, their endangered status and their importance to the ecosystems of the world, you know, the coral reef as an example. Not to mention the brutal way their fins are kind of, I don't know what you want to use, harvested. If there's one thing on this menu that you won't eat or that I won't eat, it's shark. Often in the form, you know, around the world, the delicacy, shark fin soup. So, you know, what they do is they catch these sharks, they cut their fins off and just throw the sharks back in. The sharks, unfortunately, live for a decent amount of time without their fins before they die. So it's kind of a torturous way to go. But, you know, they use endangered hammerheads. They use other kinds of sharks to make these soups. So, you know, it's really to me, it's appalling. It's widespread. I wouldn't do it. You know, there's other ways to go than shark fin soup at the end of the day. And I don't want to disparage anybody's culture, but we need sharks. Frogs. This probably would be the last one I'll be able to do. So I don't even know how many we got through. I have more to go. But for many, you know, frogs in the wild are a great, great food source. Traditionally, in the finest restaurants in the world, frog legs are served, right? The frogs, wild frogs are caught at an alarming rate, really, and really we're depleting the population of them. So we got to start being careful. You know, in New York State, we regulate the frog hunting seasons to protect the frogs. But the majority of frog legs served in the United States and Europe are shipped from, truthfully, Indonesian frog farms. So if you're buying commercial frog legs, they're probably coming from Indonesia. The vast demand for frog legs, between 450 million to 1 billion in the U.S. alone, are consumed on a regular basis. You know, so there's kind of a uproar now, and, you know, has raised concern internationally that, you know, exporting these live frogs is kind of becoming a problem in some way. So, you know, it's just something to keep an eye on. But, you know, a fried frog leg, you know, nothing better. It's delicious. And if you live in an area where they could legally be hunted, I would assume try it and eat it. And I had a longer list. Could have went on. Snails were on my list. Probably not that shocking. I wanted to talk about alligator. Have you ever had alligator, Jack?
Sorry, no, I have not. Declan here has, though.
Declan, what it tastes like? I'm taking a survey.
You know, I don't mean to, like, it's very stereotypical. It tasted a lot just like chicken.
So like chicken, right?
Yep.
Yeah, and I've had it, I don't know, 7-10 times, and it always tasted different. I don't get it. You can't lock it down. We were going to talk about snakes. We were going to talk about certain cultures eating horse or donkeys. Whales are consumed on the face of this earth. Don't worry, cat lovers. I had dogs on my list. We were going to talk about it, and I would eat a dog. Cockroaches are consumed around the world. And then the last one, Jack, I was going to be extremely shocking. You know what I was going to say? Take one guess.
Human?
I was going to get to the humans.
Nice.
But we didn't get there, thank goodness. So I probably saved myself.
Would you, if you could, eat human?
You know, we don't have time for this, Jack.
My answer is yes.
Listen, that's why we live in America. I'm a libertarian.
That's right.
You know, as long as you're not eating me, I don't give a shit what you do. No, I don't know. Yeah, if I was, you know, on the plane in Peru, you remember the movie? What was that? That movie? They had to eat the humans, the frozen humans. I think I would eat you if I had to, if I had to survive. And I wouldn't kill you to eat you.
Right.
But if you're already dead, have a leg of Jack.
Sure.
On the grill? Sure. I would have to do it for survival. All right. That seems like... see, I told you I'm brilliant in ending my shows. So there you go, people. 10 to 20 things you might not want to eat. Thank you for listening to the Wild Game Domain today on heritageradionetwork.org. I'd like to thank Jack for engineering and producing my show, as usual. And remember, if you kill it, you better eat it. Thank you, America.
Thanks for listening to this program on heritageradionetwork.org. You can find all of our archived programs on our website or as podcasts in the iTunes Store by searching Heritage Radio Network. You can like us on Facebook and follow us on Twitter at @heritage_radio. You can email us with questions anytime at info@heritageradionetwork.org. Heritage Radio Network is a 501c3 nonprofit. To donate and become a member, visit our website today. Thanks for listening.